March 18th, 2020, and I call the meeting of the Complaint Screening Committee of the Arizona Board of Psychologists Examiners to order. Ms. Poe, would you call the roll?
Yes, Madam Chair. Ms. Shreve?
Present.
Dr. Davis Wilson?
Present.
Dr. Flowers?
Present.
We have a quorum.
Thank you, Ms. Poe. Item 3 is approval of minutes. Is there a motion to approve the regular session and executive session minutes of March 2nd, 2020?
I so move.
All right. I heard Dr. Davis Wilson move, and Dr. Flowers, you second?
Yes.
Okay, thank you. All in favor? Aye.
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 Hearing any opposed? Hearing none, the minutes are approved. Item 4, case discussion and decisions. The Complaint Screening Committee, pursuant to Arizona's revised statute 322081H, may dismiss the complaints reappearing on this agenda or refer them to the full board for consideration and action. Complaints dismissed by the committee shall not be disclosed in response to telephone inquiry or placed on the board's website pursuant to ARS 322081H1. Upon a vote of the majority of the quorum, the committee may go into executive session on any item on the agenda pursuant to ARS 38431.03A2 to review confidential records or A3 to receive confidential legal advice from our board's attorney. For those of you in attendance, please be aware that the chair reserves the right to change the order of the items on the agenda based on the parties present and request to speak. A person or a representative of a person who has filed or received a complaint and who is present may make a brief statement to the committee by filling out a request to speak form and give it to the board staff person. The committee may also have questions for those who speak. This is very important. Please only use initials when referring to patients or children. Be aware that the content and many records involved in these complaints is confidential and that the content should not be discussed in a public meeting. Be advised that the committee will go into executive session to discuss any confidential records. Okay, we need a...
The licensee is on the phone. However, her attorney, Dr. Akins, is getting a busy signal when he's trying to call in. So I suggest...
Dr. Akins, are you on the phone?
Yes, I am. Thank you. It finally went through.
Okay, thank you. So we can go ahead and call the first case then.
All right, thank you. Okay, seems as though all the parties are here. The first complaint is 2019... Dr. Rachel Ocampo Hugalinas, I'm sure I mispronounced that. Dr. Davis Wilson, you are the lead. Would you like to provide a summary?
Yes. I have, hold on just a second. Sorry, I muted myself and got started and I got to restart. All right. The complainant is the mother of J.A., her daughter, who she was working to get a therapist that she connects with. She started seeing Dr. Hugalinas on a weekly basis.
Dr. Davis Wilson, this is Jean Galvin.
Yes.
Other members who are on the telephone, could you please mute your telephone because we have a lot of background static. Okay, thank you.
All right. So Dr. Hugalinas, hold on 1 second.
Hello?
Hello, just one moment. Dr. Davis Wilson will be right back.
Okay.
All right, I apologize. Dr. Hugalinas was aware of the states that Dr. Hugalinas was aware of J.A.'s concerns regarding her daughter and the use of technology, and that was one of the primary concerns that that was set forth in the referral. There were 3 reasons for filing the complaint that J.A. lists.
Dr. Davis Wilson, sorry to interrupt. Could you speak a little slower? Our connection's not the best. And so I think it'd help everybody if you just speak a little slower, and maybe we can hear it a little better. Because it's a little bit don't know what the word is, staticky.
And I don't know if you're too close to the phone.
Or, so if you could...
I will try to move it around. Is this better?
Yes, that's better.
All right. So Dr. Hagosian, the complaint that was filed, the complainant alleges that Dr. Hagosian influenced the daughter to use technology during crisis, despite technology being the reason why the complaint, or sorry, the services were sought. Dr. Hagosian shared JA's email correspondence with the daughter, which created which allegedly created a strained relationship, and that Dr. Hagosian dropped the daughter as a client without any warning, stating that she could not deal with the parental questions. Dr. Hagosian did this when the daughter was in the middle of testing, so the testing was not completed. JA provides the following summary of events. JA is very involved in daughter's therapy, and Dr. Hagosian had invited her to many of the sessions. Dr. Hagosian and JA had communicated by phone to email and discussed the daughter's well-being over the course of services. Their conversations included JA's questions surrounding her concerns related to the strategies being used. She states that Dr. Hagosian recommended gaming despite the mother's concerns. After hearing the information, JA emailed Dr. Hagosian to get clarification regarding the recommendation since she had concerns about the technology abuse. She believes that it was irresponsible for Dr. Hagosian to recommend the use of technology when the daughter was in crisis if she was already struggling with the use of technology. Dr. Hagosian responded to JA's email that she would address the issue in her next session. They did start the first round of IQ testing. And that she addressed the gaming situation, stating gaming should only be used when in crisis and not every day. Dr. Hagosian has responded and provides the following background regarding her professional experience. She states that she has a master's degree in mental health counseling as well as a doctorate degree in counseling psychology. She's been practicing in East Valley for the past 11 years. She integrates both individual and family therapy into the client's treatment plan, invites parents into the session to help them to better understand how to support their child. She's integrated theoretical approach to treatment drawing approaches such as CBT, DBT, and mindfulness-based therapies. Dr. Hagosian states that she obtained written consent from JA as she was the healthcare decision maker for the daughter. She was seen between July 2019 and November 2019 for one diagnostic session, 7 individual therapy sessions, 5 family sessions, and 2 family therapy sessions with just the daughter alone. The sessions with JA alone. The sessions with JA were intended to help JA's relationship with her daughter and not to pose additional issues. Dr. Hagosian has several emails and phone exchanges with JA throughout daughter's treatment, and the final contact was on November 19th of 2019. His therapeutic efforts revolved around addressing daughter's concerns related to a strained relationship, school performance, and social concerns. Dr. Hagosian disputes the technology addiction was the reason JA was seeking therapy for the daughter. Technology was not one of the major goals that was indicated for the daughter's therapy. From a clinical perspective, she viewed the daughter's technology use as a way of coping with her symptoms, and there was notes that there is disagreement within the published professional literature regarding the use of video games or classifying the use of video games as an addiction. The diagnostic criteria proposed by the experts in the field of addiction did not constitute. This is a concern that Dr. Hagosian had. And after JA voiced that doctor's technology was, or that the daughter's technology was a concern, Dr. Hagosian described ways that she would address it in treatment. And then she did list gaming as a potential strategy that could help refocus the daughter as a treatment strategy. In regards to the allegation that Dr. Hagosian shared the email correspondence with the doctor, the doctor does state that during a session, the daughter inquired as to the purpose of the conversation and why JA would be present for Dr. Hagosian. She mentioned the email and indicated that she would have clear, she should have been clear in the technology that she used during sparing time. Daughter apologized for J.A.'s actions and noted that J.A. has a history of complaining and being difficult to work with. J.A. entered the session, Dr. Agosi, and restated that she had told the daughter before that she had invited J.A. to share her concerns and to add on to Dr. Agosian's thoughts. J.A. indicated that she did not have anything more to say. In regards to allegations that Dr. Agosian abandoned daughter as client, Dr. Agosian states that she sent sent an email to J.A. stating that she apologized for contributing to any undue strain, that she acknowledged that J.A. had a pattern of questioning her clinical judgment, and that she stated that she would not be a good fit to continue as the daughter's therapist. At that point, Dr. Agosian was open to having a typical termination session with the daughter and would have recommended that they do so. However, she ultimately decided to not pursue the discharge meeting as J.A.'s changeable nature, future emails, challenges respecting boundaries, and questioning the clinical judgment became challenging for treatment. She apologizes for her passion surrounding the treatment and coming off as too strong. Dr. Agosian reconsidered terminating treatment and indicated that she was open to feedback. And I think that concludes. Let me add in here. Dr. Agosian represents that terminating the daughter's treatment is not considered abandonment according to the ethical rules and statutes. And that concludes the summary of this complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Is the complainant on the line? AJ? JA?
The complainant is not present. However, the licensee and her attorney, Dr. Akins, are on the phone.
Okay. All right. Doctor, and how do you pronounce your last name? I want to make sure I get that right.
Hogazian.
Okay, thank you. And Dr. Akins is on the line. Do you have any comments for the board? And if you could actually please introduce yourselves for the record, and then if you'd like to make any comments.
This is Dr. Akins. I'm counsel for Dr. Hogazian, and I know she does have some comments for the committee, and I'll let her address those at this point after she announces her appearance today.
Thank you, Dr. Hagan.
Yep. Sorry. I just want to introduce myself. I'm Dr. Okombo Hogazian, and I'd like to thank you all for allowing me to address you in the complaint itself. And let me note that the treatment of this child in the case was within my scope of education, practice, and training. I want to begin by explaining that this was an unusual treatment situation. The child's mother often wanted or expected significant input into the parameters of treatment. And sometimes this didn't mesh well with my view of the child's needs and how best to address her treatment goals. So my reading of the complaint also suggested that there were three areas of concern, so I'll briefly touch upon those again just to highlight what I'd like to say. So the first aspect of the complaint was mother's concern that I inappropriately recommended the use of technology because she believed her daughter was addicted to technology. It was my professional opinion that the child did not meet criteria for any diagnosis related to overuse of technology, and I only included technology as a coping strategy among several other strategies to manage times of high distress and panic. It was not the only, again, or even the most important strategy that I suggested. The second aspect of the complaint was my disclosure of information to the child that mother thought was confidential. This information was my mentioning of one email from mother regarding her concerns about her daughter's technology use. Within this email conversation, mother made no request to keep this confidential and, in fact, wanted to be part of this conversation with her child. I'd like to say further that at the beginning of treatment, I reviewed with mother and child the limits of confidentiality. I only mentioned mother's email to the child to provide a context as to why mother had a plan to intercession later that day to discuss technology use and her concerns about that. So the third aspect of the complaint, mother took exception to my decision to terminate services. I decided to end treatment because I didn't feel it was a good fit, and I didn't see that the child was making the progress that we would have liked. I felt that mother's changeable mind during treatment also posed challenges. A prime example of this is her requesting to be part of the conversation to share her concerns about technology use and then moving away from this in session. And So I felt that mother had lost confidence in me as the therapist at that time, and I found that it was difficult to justify continuing work under those circumstances. Before electing to end services, I considered critical issues. So firstly, the child had a low level of risk for safety issues, and I didn't feel that she was significantly attached to myself as the therapist or invested in the treatment process. About 3 weeks prior to the decision to end treatment, she actually spoke to her mother about wanting to end services. Because she didn't feel like she was getting what she wanted out of it. I also deemed that the assessment that we were doing toward the end of treatment was not related to any crisis or safety concerns. It was more diagnostic, related to attentional issues. I thought that a future provider could definitely use my preliminary findings and continue that testing if mother wanted that to happen. Normally, I would have offered closure sessions, but in this particular case, my sense was that neither mother or child would have wanted the closure sessions or benefited from them. So when I terminated treatment, I provided mother with the diagnostic summary of those assessment results and recommendations for future treatment. I reminded her that I would be available to consult with future providers and provide them records with her release of information. I suggested that mother check back with her insurance company for a list of referrals for other providers. I'd like to thank the committee again for allowing me to address them, and I would be happy to answer any questions you have for me.
Thank you for your comments. Committee members, any questions for the doctor?
Yes, I do have some.
All right. Dr. Davis-Wilson, why don't you go first as you're the lead?
Yes.
Absolutely. Thank you. And thank you, Dr. Flowers. I do have a question related to your typical process for termination of treatment. Can you walk me through? I know the conclusion that you came to on this particular case, but can you walk us through what your typical discharge when an individual is no longer seeking treatment or needing treatment or you're no longer fit, what that would typically look like for your practice?
So in a typical case, I might think weeks ahead of time and be thinking about fit for treatment, thinking about progress, seeing if we've been meeting or moving toward the goals that the client would want. And if that's not happening, then I would have conversations with the client about, you know, is this a good fit? Are they getting out what they are wanting to from treatment? And then we would just be prepping them toward maybe transferring to another clinician. Sometimes I've met with people and we're about two sessions out from termination and we'll start talking about, okay, where have we been in treatment? Where do we want to go in treatment? What's going to be best for them in the future? So we make a kind of plan for when they meet with another provider so they can hit the ground running with that. And then again, just with closure sessions, talking about what they have gotten out of treatment, the goals that they have met, and celebrating those. Just things very typical to closure sessions. But I would do that a couple weeks out.
Excellent. Thank you. That's the only question I have at this point.
All right, Dr. Flowers?
I have several. One thing I'm wondering, I did see the informed consent, but I also saw there's a diagnosis and treatment plan down on July 17th, 2019. And for board staff and members, it's PDM 64. And, the treatment plan outlines, gives a diagnosis, presenting problem, and then defines some goals. And within that, I didn't see anything in regards to technology. I'm wondering, I don't see signatures on that. I'm just wondering if those goals were discussed with the daughter or with the complainant.
So the goals and the presenting problems, the foundation of the treatment plan came directly from the diagnostic our interview with them in the preliminary sessions or the beginning sessions, actually. And I from there, I build the treatment plan off of that. So I don't directly discuss with them the treatment plan or have them, sign it, but it's definitely informed and built upon the presenting concerns that they're bringing in. Technology was not part of the treatment plan because in the preliminary sessions the diagnostic initial session, mother did not outline that as a primary concern.
Okay. When I read her complaint, it made it sound as if that was like a huge priority and she was expecting you to deal with that. But the treatment plan doesn't mention it. So that's why I was wondering, it sounds like you and at least the mother were on different pages as far as expectations. And, it sounds as if you had an understanding of, felt as if you knew what they wanted. And maybe you got what the daughter wanted. But it looks like there might have been a disconnect with the mother's agenda.
That may be correct.
Okay, so it sounds like you were... The anxiety, the issues you thought it would cover a number of things, but it'd be not specifically tailored to technology.
That's correct.
Were there agreements in regards to sharing of information? Obviously, there was this stuff about the regular, you can't, there are things you have to divulge if there's a risk. And that was in there, obviously, and that was appropriately done. But I wonder about agreements, like what you will share that the daughter shares with you, with the mother, and then obviously, and then also what you would share with what the daughter says, with the complainant or in regards to the daughter in other conversations. Was that part of the conversation at any point? If I'm making sense here.
Yeah. So I don't have a specific line in my informed consent about email information and what parents use confidential or not confidential. With typical cases, parents will say within email or when they're talking to me, please, this is information that I wouldn't like shared with my daughter or my son. Or I'll just get a sense of that. So if it's very sensitive family information about, maybe domestic violence or substance use issues of parents, then I wouldn't, those would definitely be things that would fall under the category of keeping separate from information from clients. In this case, I shared the information about the email because client asked me, why is mother coming to, why is she coming in later in session? And I mentioned, well, she shared some concerns about the technology as coping strategy, so we're all going to talk together about it. And that was the whole information that I shared with client about the email.
Okay, and the client was the daughter. There were no goals for JA or
no
the relationship. The JA was basically somebody who provided information. Is that basically
yes.
her role?
Right. So
okay.
She's client's mother, so she provided information. One of the objectives was to, well, presenting concerns was client's strained relationship with her mother. And so working through that, helping them to better communicate, but mother was not at all a client of mine. She didn't have any goals of her own or anything of that sort.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Are there any other questions? Doctor, I do have a question. This is Tamara Shreve. I'm the chair. In your termination of the with the client, sending the email, is that, you know, typically you have a closeout meeting. Could you explain again just for why you felt it wasn't, why you didn't feel like that was an, you should do that for this situation?
I felt that having a closure session with mother and client, that it would have actually maybe caused more strain on the client, increased anxiety because she had shared before, you know, her embarrassment and frustration with mother and her interactions with service providers. And so I didn't want to create a context or session for those grievances to be aired in which client would become more frustrated with mother and it would have backfired and been non-beneficial to client.
Right.
And I'm not sure that if I offered it, mother or the client would want to attend, really, because they didn't, well, mother at least didn't want the treatment to end.
Okay, and given the situation, would you do anything differently?
I feel I might have communicated earlier with mother about my concerns regarding fit. There were some things that came up earlier in sessions where she was a little emotionally reactive and challenging, and I think I would have mentioned things earlier and not have let it gone to this point.
All right, thank you. All right, are there any other questions from the other chair members? All right, hearing none, I'd like to thank both of you for participating. The committee now is going to go on deliberations. Please note that deliberations is a time for the committee members to deliberate amongst themselves without interruption from the complaint, licensee, or attorneys. Dr. Davis-Wilson, you are the lead. Would you like to start the deliberations?
Yeah, Madam Chair, after reviewing the information of this complaint and having listened to the doctor, I don't see any of the concerns that would arise. I don't see any that would arise to a statutory violation or a violation of any of the rules. I do, in general, I do like to see a more robust, systematic transition and discharge process. However, I think some circumstances in some cases can put you in a position of potentially doing more harm than what's intended, and it sounds like that might be the perspective that the doctor is expressing today. I do agree that just as a general recommendation, making sure that it's very clear what the reason for referral is, that recommendations specific to a treatment plan include the inclusion and clarification with the family present if they're going to be the ones that have to follow through or enforce that treatment plan outside of the session is something that can be cleaned up, but I'm not sure that it rises to the level of a violation. I'd be open to my colleagues on how they feel about that information.
Thank you, Dr. Davis-Wilson. Dr. Flowers?
Yes, thank you. I share similar concerns. I could speak from some experience. I've been in the field for a long time, but there are many times when we clinically have an idea what we feel is needed and what is wanted, and yet there are times when the referral person or the patient may have a whole different agenda in mind. And, you know, for that reason, it's helpful to have, you know, I found it to be productive to review with the individual, you know, what the plan is and why, and literally have them sign off on it. And when there's a referral person, like a parent or an organization that has some kind of reason for referral, it may not match up with that of the client. And so there can be frustration. And it sounds in this case, you know, that J.A., being a concerned parent, we're worried about technology and other things as well, and just, it may be in her mind, this was a key objective and what she wanted for her daughter, but apparently that was not included in their conversations. Maybe the mother was thinking it's so obvious that the doctor will just pick that up immediately. Of course, I am confident that the doctor does not reside in the house and see what the family's doing for entertainment and distraction. So, and then I think also, especially when you're dealing with adolescents and children, to have a lot of clarity to the degree possible about what's going to be shared, so that there are no, like, you got to be kidding, why'd you give that information? But and then the other thing that seemed to be happening here was the mother, I guess because of her different agenda, began to want to make some decisions about what the therapist would do or should be doing. And none of us, few of us, hopefully none of us, want to have the referral person dictate treatment and outcome. And so there was a mismatch there and some animosity, and it kind of messed up the chances for treatment. And, you know, it's hard to know if it would have made, you know, we don't know, but at some point it's like, this is not working. Maybe it was working okay with the daughter, but with the mother's involvement and animosity, I'm sure that would kind of color the attitude of the situation and make it inappropriate to continue. And it's like, I see why the termination was done, even though there was some bad feeling. So those are my comments. Oh, I want to say, too, I would recommend that the doctor review, you know, how she does her procedures on confidentiality and sharing of information, and ensuring that clients are in agreement with the treatment plans. But I don't really see that there's a statutory violation here.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. I would agree with both of my other committee members that I don't see a violation of the statute. I think they brought up some very good points regarding the case. Is there a motion that anyone would like to make regarding this case?
I would motion to.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, go ahead.
I would motion to dismiss this complaint.
Get a motion to dismiss. Is there a second?
I second the motion.
We have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. Thank you very much. The next complaint is complaint number 2026, Alexa Kavanova. I am the lead of this case. I will provide a brief overview. Dr. Kavanans worked for the doctor on demand, where she provided telepsychotherapy. The complainant, J.C., states that he was treated by the doctor from September 2017 to November 2018 through the doctors on demand, and that the doctor failed to maintain an appropriate therapist-client boundaries. He felt entered into an emotional affair with JC by instigating and fostering a dual relationship as a friend. Court action that was filed, and there was a settlement through mediation of a which JC and his wife received a amount of money. The doctor in the settlement agreement basically stated, you know, did not take responsibility, or not, what is that wording for that? Denied the actions, but to resolve the matter, was willing to pay the client the amount of money as executed in the agreement. There were 3,964 text messages between JC and the doctor. JC notes that these communications were personal in nature, and that they were never billed by the doctor, yet they took place while JC was her client. The doctor responded. Doctor states that she maintains a private practice in California. She's concurrently served as supervising psychologist at a help group in California. In 2015, she joined Doctors in Demand and worked with them till November 18th. She states that JC first sought counseling through Doctors in Demand, August 2017, to improve his marital relationship and decrease his experience of negative emotions. All counseling sessions were conducted remotely, as they were both in two different states and never met in person. The last session took place November of 2018. The doctor denies the existence of a dual relationship. For the vast majority of the time the doctor was treating JC, they would communicate via text messaging regarding scheduling sessions or technical issues within the DOD platform. Following the end of August 2018, JC again expressed attraction to the doctor in a journal entry. The doctor explained that this was not uncommon for such issues to arise during therapeutic process. The doctor was being cautious, giving JC's reported fear of rejection and deep feelings of inadequacy. The doctor denies that she engaged in any boundary violations, but rather consistently attempted to establish boundaries with JC. And the doctor states that the allegations are unfounded and that the complaint should be dismissed. That's my summary. I believe the complainant is here if you would like to come forward. This and JC?
Actually, JC.
Okay. JC and JC, come on in. So, JC, you are the complainant, and the other JC is, I assume, your wife, spouse?
And also a patient.
And patient, okay. And the patient.
Yeah.
Oh, could we clarify who filed the complaint?
I did.
Okay.
JC.
And for the members on the phone, JC is here present with his spouse, also has the same initials, JC, and they've passed information around. However, I do want to note that our committee members participating via phone do not have access to this.
Right. And just so everybody knows, all the committee members have read all the documentation. There's probably 1,000 pages we read on all these different cases, a total. So we've all read all of it. So if you'd like to provide... introduce yourself with your initials, mm-hmm. and then if you'd like to provide some comments, and then we may have questions for you.
Yeah. So I'm JC, the complainant, and I appreciate this chance to address the committee. I know your time is valuable. There are just eight things I really want to point out. The first is that my wife and I began seeing Dr. Kavonian as both a couple and individuals in September of 17. As a result of the process of building trust with Dr. Kavonian, I developed very intense romantic transference towards her, which I told her about in November of 2017. The third that while her initial response to that revelation was appropriate, her boundaries quickly began to deteriorate and almost immediately became non-existent. This can be seen in nearly 400 pages of journal entries, in which I repeatedly told her that I had romantic desire for her, that I wanted her romantic attentions. These were entries she read and responded to outside of any paid session. Fourth is that by mid-18, Dr. Kavanian's complete lack of boundaries in combination with her own personal wounds caused her to begin to covet and actually encourage that transference towards her. First, when a year into therapy, I confessed my fantasies towards her, it turned sexual. She asked me to journal about those specific fantasies in detail, as well as my earliest sexual experiences. And it's even more evident in how she responded to my continual pleas to become friends. She didn't turn it back on me in any kind of therapeutic exploration. She actually encouraged the friendship, telling me that I would eventually hold all the pieces about her. She fully engaged in the pursuit of the friendship through thousands of texts and several late-night phone calls where she made cascades of personal self-disclosures that served to inflame me even further. The fifth thing you need to remember is this twisted dynamic between Dr. Kavanian and myself resulted in me further spinning out, beginning to drink heavily, and ultimately villainizing my wife in some kind of attempt to make sense of what was happening in my head. The sixth thing is that in our final session, when Dr. Kavanian learned that I had shared those 3,900 plus texts with my wife, and that my wife had then subsequently contacted Dr. Kavanian's husband, Kevin, about them, Dr. Kavanian became irate. She said my wife was an aggressive bitch. She wished that she had never met me, and that she said that she never wanted to see or hear from me again. She terminated that session 14 minutes into it. The seventh thing is that Dr. Kavanian initially failed to create any kind of record of that final session. When I filed a request for the record from Doctor on Demand, they said there simply wasn't one. When I repeated the request, Dr. Kavanian created a falsified record where she said that I actually initiated the termination of therapy and that it was my idea and that I was happy about that. And then she quit Doctor on Demand that same day. The final thing that you need to remember is that when Dr. Kavanian was notified about this complaint by your board, we received a threat from her attorney on Christmas Eve threatening legal action if we pursued this further. We're here. I'm sure Dr. Kavanian and her lawyers are going to paint me as completely nuts. Fair enough, because I was. That is how I became under her care. And she was leading the way down that path. Look at the phone records. Look at the logs that I handed you. Look at the number of times that she initiated contact with me. Those aren't me calling her. That's her contacting me. 3,964 texts continuously throughout the day from evening, seeking companionship and comfort from me. When she was sick and she wanted to be comforted, she contacted me. When the Thousand Oaks wildfire was burning outside her house and she was scared because her husband wasn't there, she texted me, and I texted back and forth with her till 1:30 in the morning when she was able to get safely to her brother's house. There was a time when her husband was away traveling in Vietnam for a prolonged period of time, and the loneliness would seem to be just a little too much. It was me that she reached out to. By the end of our relationship, she was spinning as bad as I was, if not worse. I'd ask you to look at the times of days that she initiated the contacts. For example, on November 4th, after 4.5 hours of texting back and forth, she then called me at 11:30 at night, and we talked until 2 in the morning. All while her husband was traveling in Vietnam. And what did we talk about? We talked about becoming friends, her family history. She even invited me to come over for lunch if I was ever in LA. And then look at the next day. And by next day, I'm talking 5 hours later at 7 a.m. after we hung up the phone. Starting at 7:19 in the morning, off and on throughout the day, we were texting until she called me at 7:04. And we talked for 3.5 hours until 10:30 at night. And again, what did we talk about? Well, we were friends by that point. We talked about her kids, Atom, Sophie, and Nishan. We talked about my kids. We talked about her husband, Kevin. We talked about the remodel that she was doing in her house where she was concerned about the flow of space in her living room and how it was too cramped. We talked about our families. We talked about things we like to do. There are a lot of other these kind of things I'm not going to go into here because they're on the documentation. I would just ask you to look at this in the light of the lens of how would you treat a patient that was responding to you. Dr. Cavonian damn near destroyed my life and my marriage. She is not safe, and people need to be protected from her. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for your statement. We might have some questions for you.
Yeah, please.
You were talking about your last meeting with her. On that phone call, who initiated it? Was that
It was a scheduled session, but if you look at the text preceding it the day before, we were going to talk about her counter transference to me. I had been going on for days about how I needed to, you know, everything that I think about you, I need to understand you. And she's like, that's really not a text thing. That's more, let's talk about that in our next session. So that was supposed to be what we were going to talk about.
So what was supposed to be a regular session then, when you mentioned that you had shared the text messages with your wife and that your wife had contacted or sent an email to her husband.
Yeah.
And at that point, that's when she terminated the counseling, the professional relationship, the counseling.
That's when she yelled at me and called my wife a bitch.
Okay,
and said,
okay.
That's when she abandoned me as a client.
She terminated, and was there any discussion on any type of closure? Was there an idea of here's who else you could see?
No, and if you look at the record, she says I initiated it.
But it was that was the end of your counseling.
That was the end.
Okay. And then with the text messages, there's obviously a lot of text messages. Was that through the DOD system, or is that on your own?
They're on my phone. They're on my iPad. We have them documented.
Okay. And so it's not through a certain system. It's just directly to you?
Verizon, my cell phone to her cell phone.
Okay. And at any point... during the text messages, at what point did you feel like that the line had been crossed?
Speaking for where I was, I mean, if you're asking me now, I'd say day one, like immediately afterwards, when she started to call me after session to extend sessions. If she would call myself, the session would end, she would call myself, we'd talk. And you'll see that on the records.
And you were not billed for those?
I never, at the time, this was the greatest thing that ever happened to me. There weren't boundary violations. This is what I wanted. This was the best thing of, that's when I hung up with that last call, I went down to my wife and said, I hate you so much. I can't believe you took the best thing I've ever had in my life and destroyed it. That's where my head was at.
But you weren't billed for those.
Not for the text, not for the journal entries.
And not for the extra phone calls, the 2 a.m.
No.
Okay. I just want to, I'm just trying to, okay.
Only the doctor on demand. You'll see the log of doctor on demand. That's the only thing.
Numerous phone calls, conversations that were not part of doctor on demand.
Right. And we were billed for the full hour for that last 14-minute session.
Okay. But there were numerous phone calls.
Outside of session, no bill. No record. Doctor on demand had no idea.
Okay. That's what I need. Thank you. Dr. Flowers, Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I don't have any at this time.
Dr. Davis-Wilson?
No, I don't at this time either.
All right. Thank you.
JC.
You're not the complainant. You are the complainant's spouse. If you'd like to say a few words.
I would. Thank you. I also was a patient of Dr. Cavonian's who started as individual counseling at the same time as my husband. We initially saw her. We were talking about our upcoming 25th wedding anniversary and said, can we take our marriage from maybe a level 8 to a 10? We had room for improvement. Unfortunately, over the course of 1 year with Dr. Cavonian, things started to get much worse rather than better. Within 3 months of treatment, my husband, as he's mentioned, tearfully came to me and he told me he was experiencing romantic transference. I Googled the heck out of that term to understand what that even meant. and came to understand that that could be something that was normal if the therapist handled it in a responsible way. And he told me he was assured that that would go away and that he could continue counseling. I remember that he also told me that Dr. Kavonian chastised him for telling me about the romantic transference. She called it reckless sharing and told him that that was not helpful to share with me. That marked a departure from our transparency that we had had in the 20-some years of our marriage. No matter the ugly or whatever, we have always been honest with each other. And at that point, I remember thinking, things are different now. He's not going to tell me what he's thinking. Shortly thereafter, I stopped seeing Dr. Kavonian as an individual client because I was not benefiting from her services. But by contrast, JC was extremely enthusiastic about his sessions. I trusted that she would act as a professional and take the utmost care not to inflame the romantic transference, but that it should be going away. However, as the year moved on, he became more detached from the marriage and more fixated on his communicating with her. Within a year, he came to me again and told me that the transference had actually increased rather than decreased over 14 months, and that it had turned sexual in nature. He also told me that he had been suicidal, which I did not know. He had become suicidal and that he had gone to a doctor and gotten on antidepressants, which I also didn't realize. I did notice that his drinking was increasing. And I came to find out later it was up to 2 bottles of wine per night as he would sit and journal to her until 2 a.m. That's why you have the volumes of records from that, which she would then read and respond to by phone or text or however the next day. Again, the doctor chastised him for telling me about his sexual fantasies with her. And I remember this quote. She scolded him and told him that she had a, quote, sacred heart box in which she kept her private thoughts and fantasies and did not tell her husband, and that my husband should not be telling me about his secret fantasies. I found a journal entry from him near that time, and he was writing, "Is transference okay? How do I stop?" This was something that she was aware that he was troubled and experiencing shame and guilt from the transference. Believe it or not, I continued to trust the doctor, and it really didn't occur to me that she would ever pursue time with him outside of Doctor on Demand. I was not privy to the texts. I wasn't checking the phone. Like I said, we'd always had transparency. I just didn't think there was a reason to. I didn't realize that she was calling him at midnight some nights and emailing and sending videos. It never occurred to me that they were regularly beginning to discuss how to, quote, terminate counseling in order to navigate around APA ethics codes and state licensing board statutes so that they could further their friendship. It never occurred to me that she would assign my husband to write about his sexual fantasies toward her while I was alone upstairs sleeping. It didn't occur to me that she would promise to reveal her own countertransference to him. One short excerpt from texting that you all can see. My husband asked, "Do you think we could transition from a therapist to a friend?" Her reply in the text, "I've never done it before, but it would be a lot of fun to be your friend." And she always included little, you call them emoticons or emojis, blushing smiley faces. "Okay." My husband said, "That last statement is going in my little secret box in my heart." She was very much teaching him how to handle these things. Believe it or not, when he suddenly declared that he no longer wanted to be in our 24-year marriage, I still did not believe that the doctor was actively inflaming our marital disconnect. Rather, I stupidly believed that... sorry. When he told me that they had agreed that I was an unsafe person and that I was abusive in our marriage, I actually went out to find another. I wanted to seek counseling to take responsibility and fix myself. I became suicidal for the first time in my life. I also reached out to medical care and got antidepressants and sleep help because I couldn't sleep. Okay. Looking back at writing that the doctor shared with him at that time, she counseled him not to speak with me about why he was dissatisfied with our marriage. She told him to consider whether he wanted to remain in a marriage that was was a toxic relationship. She emailed him to get on the boundaries bandwagon and not to talk with me unless in the presence of a licensed counselor. So as a result, this completely severed our ability to verbally communicate or have any affection whatsoever. And as I mentioned, I became suicidal as well. I did reach out. I'm embarrassed to say I reached back out to her through him to ask if I could get back into counseling because I wanted to fix what was the matter with me. And she refused to counsel me at that point and said no, that their relationship was too strong and it would not work for me to come back to counseling. I needed to find somebody else, which actually was a godsend because I did go find somebody else. And that brought back my sanity. In the meantime, JC began to drop hints at terminating his counseling with the doctor, but he told me they were going to be transitioning to more of a friendship. I asked at that point, can I see this communication? Where is it? And he said, yes, you can see my text. So we sat together on the bed, and he sat beside me, and I read through the text, and I wanted to vomit. There were thousands of texts sent at some up until 2 a.m., some at 7 a.m., around the clock. These were not of a therapeutic nature. They were discussions of their personal life, their likes, their dislikes for rock music, recipes, raising children, and discussions of how to terminate counseling in order to further the friendship. When JC later told the doctor that he had shown me the texts, she did become very angry and told him that those were meant for him alone. And she said, do you want me to show your texts to my husband? 2 days later, when she learned that I had taken her texts to two licensed counselors in Arizona, she became livid and terminated that relationship. When I took the texts to the two other licensed counselors, they were in horror. They told me that it was clearly an emotional affair between therapist and client and that she would lose her license. I chose to reach out to the doctor's husband to ask him to put some pressure on her to stop contacting my husband outside of counseling. I was left to pick up the pieces of a very shattered husband. When she terminated that conversation after 14 minutes, my husband was suicidal. We talked with two licensed counselors that night who had me make sure that his fingerprints came off the gun safe. He was livid with me for interfering in his relationship, but we were concerned about him as well. We were concerned about the safety of both of us. His fingerprints came off that safe. Our counselor knew it. She was on the phone with us. My new counselor knew it and was on the phone with us that night. Since then, we've spent thousands of dollars on counseling. He attended an 8-day intensive. We've paid for much individual counseling, couples counseling, my children, we've paid for counseling so far, and now we're in group counseling as well. We've been picking up the pieces of a shattered marriage that's 25 years old, and I can say truthfully, I can tell that we're going to be okay. But I didn't know that all along. I didn't even know if we were going to be here to be okay. looking back at the content of her texts, please look at the times of day she contacted him. Note the frequency with which she contacted him. Please consider she has not taken 1 ounce of responsibility for being inappropriate with a client, not one. I was actually glad to hear what you read in the beginning. It hasn't changed. Please consider the letter she had her lawyer send if we were to show up today to testify to what happened. We were threatened with legal action by them. Please enable her to get the help that she needs so that she won't do this to another family. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for those comments. Is the doctor on the line, and I believe also her attorney?
Yes, good morning. This is Jody Mullis on behalf of Dr. Kavonian. Dr. Kavonian is also on the line.
Great. Dr. Kavonian, are you on the line?
Yes, I am. Can you hear me?
I cannot hear you very well at all.
How about now?
Yep, that's a lot better. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay.
All right. Would you or your attorney like to make a statement?
Yes, this again, this is Jody Mullis. I would like to address the committee, please. I think you have our substantive response. We've sent them, you know, twice of them. There are two different versions of it. We supplemented it with some additional questions. I don't think the parties are in a position that we're ever going to agree. Obviously, Dr. Kavonian, in her letter, has disputed the allegations. You know, JC and JC have their position. The parties are not going to come to a consensus. And again, we, you know, deny the allegations and deny that many of the statements being made to this committee today are accurate or truthful. There's one comment I do want to address because it's being misinterpreted. They've made several comments about the attorneys within my office sending threatening letters. The reason for that is that the settlement agreement the parties reached was to resolve all issues between them, including complaints. They've breached that agreement by filing these complaints and pursuing these board matters. So it's not an inappropriate threat. It's a simple letter that's sent often when contracts are breached, especially settlement agreements. So I don't want there to be any confusion if there were, you know, if there was any from that comment. For Dr. Kavonian, she had obtained her license in Arizona simply because she was working for Doctors on Demand. She doesn't live in California. She doesn't practice medicine in California. She's never, you know, had other patients in Arizona. She only got the license in Arizona to do the telemedicine services. Her license in Arizona was up for renewal as of December 31st, 2019. She's not employed with Doctors on Demand any longer, has no intention of returning to that employment and or practicing psychology in Arizona or otherwise at this time. The board had initially sent a letter that when it wasn't renewed, it would be expired, but it was actually corrected to say that because this matter was pending, the license is actually suspended. So we understand that. We had made the offer for the committee and or the board that we would be willing to work with you to enter into an agreement whereby Dr. Kavonian would not obviously pursue renewal of her license. And had committed to this board she isn't going to practice and will never practice in Arizona. You know, that's really the request of the complainants, and theirs, they've asked that basically that her license be revoked so that she doesn't practice here. And I think we're all reaching the same end result just by a different means. And I think in an effort to cooperate together in this regard would save the board the taxpayer money and otherwise a lot of time and effort if we can come to an agreement in that regard.
All right, thank you very much. Well, given that statement, it's my understanding then what the process would be is the board, this committee is the initial step. We would make a determination, and if we all agree that there are potential violations to state statute, that it would go to the full committee, at which that point you could then be in discussions with our attorney, Ms. Galvin, who works for the Arizona Attorney General's office. She is here today at the meeting. Maybe do negotiations on a potential consent decree. And when this item came before the board, so would that potential agreed upon consent, which would then, you know, could be one approved by the board, or two, the board could go ahead and review this as a initial review. If I'm not speaking correctly, Ms. Galvin, am I correct?
That's correct. The board and a psychologist are always permitted to try to negotiate a settlement. This settlement cannot happen at this level.
Right.
So I would urge the committee to continue with its investigation and make any recommendations to the board that you see.
All right. Thank you. So thank you, Dr. and Ms. and Ms. Mullins. Board members, given that situation, I do see, well, we'll go into the, are there any, I don't have any questions given the circumstances and the statement of the attorney. Do any of my board members have questions for the doctor?
Well, Madam Chair, I'm just wondering if the licensee is also on the line.
She is on the line, and what they're saying is that she's willing to through a consent decree, not be licensed
okay.
in Arizona.
Okay.
If I may,
okay.
Dr. Flowers, this is Jean Galvin.
Sure.
just to be very clear, my interpretation from the representations of the doctor's counsel is that she would just promise not to renew and promise not to seek a license in Arizona again. And Jody, if I'm misstating, I'm assuming that you're talking about some sort of non-disciplinary resolution of this matter.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately that would be the goal. I would like to, as the attorney represented, and I apologize, I think you said that her name was Nick. I just missed that. Or Ms. Galvin. Correct. I would like to have something where we enter into an agreement, like she said, a consent decree, that Dr. Cavonian will not be renewing her license, will never practice in Arizona. And obviously the board has a right under statute anyway that, you know, if, let's say for some strange reason she decided to come to Arizona and attempted to renew her license, the investigation would obviously not be negated. You know, it's not negated. It's still out there. But if the license is suspended and it, let's say this whole process went down the road and worst case scenario, we ended with a suspension, we're at the exact same place we were before. So I would just like to invite the committee and the board to work with me to avoid all of that under the circumstances.
It's really not for this committee to make that determination.
Right, okay.
I would just ask that they complete their investigation into this matter, and if they find any violations, then they would refer it to the full board. And if you want to talk settlement before we get to the full board, that would be appropriate. I have no authority at this time to accept any offer of settlement.
No, and it was just if there was any way to do a motion where it could, you know, it could, that could be the road or the process to follow, I think that would make sense. We have, I mean, I understand the board will need to make recommendations at this point, and if it does go to the full board, I would be absolutely willing to work with the attorneys to try and resolve that short of a hearing or otherwise.
All right. Well, then with that in mind, we're going to move ahead with the questioning of the doctor. So I'll go ahead and start with some of the questionings since I'm the lead. Doctor, could you explain, there's obviously several communications with your client during your sessions, whether it's text messaging or phone calls that were not billed. Could you explain how that was part of your therapy or why that occurred?
Sure. So the client, throughout the course of the therapy, was depressed and he...
Doctor, if you could please refrain from discussing any diagnosis on the record.
Oh, I'm very sorry. So was undergoing...
Issues,
and there were several times where he asked to be talked to, and so I did agree to talk to him on the phone on those occasions when he felt like he needed it, and no, I didn't. I didn't bill for it. I guess it was just, I do that for clients, even in private practice. Oftentimes when I'm on a phone call with them, I don't bill for that. I bill for the, you know, in office, so to speak, sessions. And I just feel like it's just, something I like to do, for clients. So it wasn't in any way, something that I was trying to be sneaky or anything like that. I was really just trying to help the client when he asked for that kind of extra support.
These phone calls, though, were in during the wee hours of the morning and, you know, middle of the night, 2 in the morning. Numerous text messaging. Is that how you typically deal with all your clients?
No, I don't. And Hindsight being 2020, I would never do that, ever. I feel like I want to explain something that was said earlier by the client. He said that I initiated this, and in fact, I very reluctantly entered into this friendly texting. So he wanted to terminate treatment, and that's in the notes. And he said he's doing better, and he feels like he's made a lot of progress. And so he wanted to terminate treatment. And I thought that was fantastic. That was great. And I said, so we would have to have a session to kind of review the year he spent in therapy, things that he can continue to work on, sort of a termination session. And he said, well, after we terminate, I'd like to have a friendship with you. So he was the one that initiated that. And I told him that was not a good idea, that if he ever wanted to return to therapy, that he wouldn't be able to because now there's this other kind of relationship. So he said he was well aware of it. He sent me journal articles regarding being friends with your client after therapy has terminated. So he was very pushy in this regard, very much wanting this. Multiple times I told him this was not ideal, and he pushed and pushed. So we were going to terminate, and I asked him during that session, I said, oh, by the way...
I'm sorry, doctor, whoever's on the phone, if you could just mute your phone if you're not speaking, we have some background noise. Thank you. Go ahead, doctor.
Okay. So... I believe it was the session we were going to terminate. And I said, by the way, have you spoken to your spouse about this, what you're trying to do, what you're wanting to do? And he said, oh, I haven't gotten around to talking to her about it. And the reason I asked him is because throughout maybe the last 6 months of therapy, he talked to me about how his spouse was, I guess she was feeling like I would give him advice and he would follow it, and she was not as influential. She felt like I was influential over his life, and that she felt threatened by that. So I wanted to be sensitive to that, and I asked him, is this okay that you want to do this friendship? And by the way, I had told him, because I still wasn't okay with the whole thing, but I said, how about we try it for 2 weeks? And then after that, if I feel like there's no benefit to you, then the texting stops altogether. So the texting actually was sort of, it was his idea that he initiated, and he was relentless, and it was my mistake to agree to something like that. But once he told me he hadn't talked to her about it, I became very nervous about it, and I said, I don't think this is going to work, because I would like both of you to be on board if this is something you're going to do, especially if there's a lot of conflict and strain in your marriage. I don't want this to cause further strain.
So, doctor, if I'm hearing this correctly, you basically are you saying that you agreed to be his friend? You agreed to terminate the psychologist relationship and then be a friend?
Well, he wanted to terminate, and he said that he had made a lot of strides. And
right, but my question is that what you agreed to?
Agreed to a 2-week period of friendly texting. I agreed to that. He wanted to continue forever, but I don't think it's a good idea. Let's try for 2 weeks. If this is a benefit to you, then great, but if it's not, then this is not.
Is that an appropriate boundary for a psychologist when you terminate a client relationship?
Like I said, I wouldn't do it today. It was something I just didn't think about it hard enough, and I think I felt very, very much pushed by this client who was very relentless in his pursuit of this texting kind of friendship. For a while, he had said, I've always been, I feel like I've always been pretending with friends, and this is the first time in my life where I can be honest about who I am and be accepted, and I want to see what a friendship like that looks like.
All right, Doctor, what was your role in this relationship?
I was his therapist, his psychologist.
You were his therapist. All right, and then in regards to the last meeting that you had, during that meeting, is that when he mentioned that he had shared the text with his wife?
No, that's not when he said it. He said it, he texted me. He texted me on a Sunday, and that's when he let me know. So there was a text exchange.
When you spoke to him, did you speak about that at the last meeting?
Well, in that text exchange, I said to him, because he was saying how wonderful it was that he was able to share these texts with his wife, and that his wife agreed that there was nothing inappropriate or romantic.
Okay, but I'm talking about the last meeting, the last session
I know.
That you had with him.
I'm getting.
Did you discuss the text messages?
No, he had said it was a very short session. I had spoken to him. I am going to answer the question, but let me give a little bit more background. So when he texted Sunday saying, "Isn't this great?" I shared with my spouse, and she agreed, everything's good. She can trust me now. Look at me, very, very happy about that. So I said, I don't know. I think this is a sign that maybe you guys should continue to work on trust. This is something that they had been struggling with, and I had encouraged them to work on that in couples therapy. So I said, with respect to your spouse, please refrain from contacting me outside of session. And he kept arguing with me. You see, you have the text. He kept arguing with me back and forth. And I said, you need to stop. If you want me to explain it to you, why you need to contact me, you can't contact me outside of session at this juncture. I can give you a call tomorrow morning and we can have a discussion about it. So, I called him the next day and I explained to him why this was not okay. And then we agreed to just meet on our regular scheduled session time on Tuesday. And so, when I met with him on the Tuesday, he said to me, "I have to tell you something. I found out that my spouse emailed your husband all these things." So I became very frightened because during the fires, just a few days before, he had sent me a map of where I live with my address on it. And so he actually Googled me and my address, and he knew where I lived. And then I read her email, and it was very scary. And so I remember asking him, I said, what are you guys gonna come knocking on my door? And this feels very, I felt very threatened. They had my address, and then that email was very, very scary, and I felt very violated. And so it was a short session. session because I was quite scared. I never, ever used the B word. I don't use that kind of language as a rule, and of course not with clients for sure.
Doctor, do you feel as though all your text messaging and out of office phone calls, you know, could have led to an individual feeling as though it was a more a different relationship than just a client psychologist relationship?
I think I thought that I was allowing this client some leeway and exploring what friendship, like being honest in a friendship, would look like. And the fact that I limited to 2 weeks, I think, and we were terminating as well. In that time, I thought, okay, even though I, you know, in my heart of hearts, I did feel like this doesn't feel right. But I, you know, it was a mistake. I really admit that was a mistake. I would never.
All right. Thank you, Doctor. Other board members, do you have any questions? Dr. Flowers, I think you had some.
Yes. Looking at the records, I didn't see in it any informed consent or treatment plan. Was that included?
Yeah, it should be there. Dr. On Demand.
This is Jody Mullis. Can I interject here? Ms. Mickelson did follow up with us. What happens is that informed consent is done on the Doctors On Demand platform. We provided copies of that. There were other parts in the records, but that's part of the Doctors On Demand platform. The patient cannot obtain therapy or treatment without providing that informed consent, and those records were provided.
Okay, I guess within all the documentation, there's quite a bit. Maybe I just couldn't put my fingers on it, my electronic fingers on it. Okay, I'm also thinking that, wondering in regards to the phone calls that were made, there were a number of them, some of them at late night, sometimes for a couple of hours, made from the doctor to the client. Can you comment on how that was the purpose of that? And so on that, it seems highly unusual that there be a need for that.
I'm not, I can say some of the phone calls had to do when he said, I need to talk to you. I'm feeling whatever. I'm feeling upset or sad or, and he was going through a hard time, and so some of those phone calls had to do with, you know, just reminding him of you have a support system. These are some things you can do, you know, kind of helping him think through things. There was one phone call that I can remember that was late. And I believe that had to do with the fires that were going on around me. I was in a very scared state of mind. And I think that was just my poor judgment in allowing that phone call to go as long as it did. So that's what I can say. Of course, I would not, and I don't, that way. I think this case was unique in that way. This person, time and time again, said, I need this, and I felt like I needed to provide that, but I should have been more firm with him and just practiced better boundaries, and that's the mistake I made.
Okay, I'm wondering, within the consent agreement, but within the treatment plan and the informed consent, are there stipulations regarding what the client is to do when there's a crisis, you know, like suicidal or at risk, what they're to do to reach out for assistance, and how you would be available, to the degree to which you'd be available for that. Is there anything on that?
Yes, of course. Link a doctor on demand, and they would give me a call, or he would be able to call me directly and let me know that he's under that kind of severe stress. So yes, he knew to do that.
Okay, but I'm wondering, we as clinicians are likely not available 24/7.
Mm-hmm.
And within the instructions of the patient, is there like information what to do when you're not available?
Like I said, they can call doctor on demand, and that's 24-hour service.
Okay, so otherwise it wouldn't necessarily be you. They would find somebody available for like crisis calls?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right, so is there, I think you said it would be highly unusual, or I'm not sure your accessibility, like at midnight and talking for a couple hours.
I think that was the night I had mentioned when the fires were going on. That was that evening where I think it was very, I was very scared. We were going to possibly lose our
home. Okay, but it sounds as if you reached out to him for support.
No, I did not.
No? Okay. No. There were fires in your area or his?
Mine. Fires in my area, and he kept sending me reports of fire maps and all kinds of things. And
okay.
Texting.
Okay, that seems kind of unusual for a patient to be doing for a therapist.
Yeah, there was. Yes, he was doing that. He had access to those kinds of maps and data, and he kept sending.
Okay. And at some point, were you advising him that was not something appropriate for a patient to be doing?
I kept saying to him, we're fine, but he just kept
continued.
Kept saying, you should evacuate, or he's trying to give me advice. I said, we're okay, you know, we're going to do what we need to do, and we're okay. I think, you know, in hindsight being 2020, I would have done things very, very differently. I think I believed this person when he said he was in that kind of distress, and I think I just wanted to provide that kind of support, and the boundaries were very, very weak. It should have been a lot stronger, especially with this client.
Okay. All right. Those are all the questions I have at this time. I thank you for your responses.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I do not have any further questions.
All right. Thank you. I'd like to thank everyone for participating, both parties for being here. The committee now is going to go into deliberations. This is a time for only the committee members to discuss this case. I am the lead on the case. I will start. I have a lot of concerns about this case. There definitely seems to be an overstep of boundaries, and there did not, with the phone calls, the text messaging, I do see, I have concerns of possible violations of the statute, particularly pertaining to 3226D1G, engaging or offering to engage in a psychologist or activities not congruent with the psychologist's professional education, training, and experience. O, providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. V. Abandoning or neglecting a client or patient in need of immediate care without making suitable arrangements for continuation of care. And then DD, which is the ethics code, and that would be 3.05, multiple relationships. Those are the potential violations that I noted. Any thoughts on that? I'd actually make it as a motion that we move forward with these potential violations.
I second the motion.
Are there any discussion or comments? So we have a motion and a second. All in favor, aye.
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 Any opposed? Hearing none, and the motion will move forward. Both parties will be hearing from our board staff in regards to when this would be put on the full board's agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody, for participating. Our next agenda item is complaint number 2028, Dr. Nicole Huggins. Dr. Flowers, you are the lead. Would you like to provide a summary of this case?
Yes, I'm scrolling to that part of my notes here. Let me pull it up. Okay, good. Here, finally, my computer became more cooperative. Yes, I'll provide a summary of the complaint. ILS is the complainant. Her son was participating in a court diversion program and was dropped from it in May of 2019. LS thought that possibly a learning disability might explain her son's difficulties at school, and Trilogy Psychological Services was seen as a possible resource for providing that kind of an evaluation. And Dr. Huggins reportedly told the stepfather that kind of an evaluation would be $2,200, which would also include substance abuse testing. The son was given an evaluation at Trilogy on September 19th, 2019. It was not a court-ordered assessment. And then the son was also subsequently provided counseling services from Dr. Hancock, who is a postdoctoral resident who worked for Dr. Huggins. On January 10th, 2020, LS filed a complaint alleging that the son's evaluation was not provided in a timely manner and that it was unclear if Dr. Hancock or Dr. Huggins had done the testing. She also complained of errors in the report. In response, Dr. Huggins said that in addition to being a licensed Arizona psychologist, she has an active school psychologist certification with the Arizona Department of Education. She said that the complaint stemmed from the mother of an adolescent male who Dr. Huggins evaluated. The evaluation was to be presented to the court regarding the son's case and potential treatment recommendations in lieu of formal prosecution. And Dr. Huggins believed that the complaint allegations are unfounded and directly refuted by evidence in the documentation. Dr. Huggins asked that the committee dismiss the complaint. And this concludes my summary of the complaint.
Thank you, Dr. Flowers. Is LS on the phone, the complainant?
Yes, I am.
Thank you for being here today. We appreciate that. Would you like to give a couple comments regarding your complaint?
Sure. So my son was in court. This was not court ordered. I was speaking to the attorney while I was waiting to go into court about how I didn't know why my son was getting in trouble. I thought it might have to do with a learning disability.
She then recommended Trilogy services to me and said she'd had other clients who got great evaluations from them, and they might be able to help me find out if he was dyslexic or not. So my husband, who is sitting here with me, JM, ended up handling a lot of that because I was working and he was more available to go handle stuff on my behalf. So anyways, we got the testing done. It took forever for us to get the results. We ended up taking him to an IEP meeting, which we had to reschedule because the information wasn't given to us in a timely manner, and they wouldn't even accept the paperwork because they said the numbers didn't make sense and the information was incomplete. So that's where we're at.
Yeah, this is JM. I also want to let you know that when I talked to Dr. Higgins about this, I said that we wanted to have testing with the court. We wanted testing, and it was never ordered for the drug for the testing for what he was going through in court for NS. But we wanted to have some counseling for my stepson, and I also went over a lot of things and gave her a lot of information about his school records and stuff. And there, and when I did the initial phone conversation, she let me know what the price was, and I let her know what kind of testing that I wanted to have done, and it was a neuropsychological, is what was given by our attorney. That's what she called it, so that's what I called it. And Colleen Engineer was our attorney at the time. And she's the one that, so I said that to her. Nicole did say that she does not do that type of testing, but she did say a lot of things about a lot of different testing, and I was not knowledgeable on everything she was telling me at that time. However, she was supposed to send me the paperwork to fill out for the authorization for said testing a week ahead of time, and I set up the appointment on Tuesday, the week prior to the actual testing on the 19th of September. When I arrived, she never sent me the packet of information for release of information and the acknowledgement for testing. At that time, she handed me the packet and said, "You need to fill this out. I'll go ahead and get NS started on the testing." She took him back and started testing, and I said to Nicole Higgins, "Do I need to fill this out? I am the stepfather. I'm not the biological father. I have not adopted my son." She said, "Have your wife fill it out and backdate the forms to today's date." And so, talking with my aunt, who's a licensed psychologist in California, she informed me a lot of things that we put in emails in our conversations with Nicole about this issue. And she put a lot of threatening stuff in emails that my wife disclosed to me.
All right.
That's all what I have to say.
Thank you. Board members, do you have any questions?
Yes, I have several.
Dr. Flowers.
Yes, I'm wondering, I guess, either one of you can respond best. What services did you ask Dr. Huggins to provide for you?
We asked for a testing for his, for, to begin with, we disclosed what he was going through with his court case for NS, and that's why she recommended testings for substance abuse, and also dyslexia and his learning disabilities with his education. We wanted something in his permanent record so that he would be able to move forward in life and be able to get the help he needed, not only during high school, but into college. And the testing that was provided by other academic personnel said it was incomplete. It did not have the reading comprehension. And all the tests were done by and with NS were done without assistance in reading of the documents for his understanding. Because of his learning disability, they should have been read.
All right, thank you. Dr. Flowers, you have more questions?
Yes, I'm wondering also what you were told about the role of Dr. Hancock. And I don't know if there were other people there that your son worked with or you worked with. Were you given information about their involvement and what it would be, that kind of thing?
Okay. I'm a lot more clearer on this. This is JM again. As far as Nicole Higgins, she's the only one that did the testing. She had us fill out forms at home, but she never interviewed either one of us in person. My wife never met Nicole Higgins ever. Only communication was through me, JM. Also, as far as, did you say Dr. Hancock?
Yeah, Dr. Hancock. What was your relationship with Dr. Hancock? What was her role?
Our relationship with Dr. Hancock was dealing with the counseling with the substance abuse issue that was not court ordered.
Okay, so there was a separate agreement for that?
Yes. Separate paperwork.
Okay, and so you were billed separately for that work?
Yes.
Okay. And I see in the complaint something about a super bill. And I'm wondering, what you were thinking. Oh, go ahead.
What we wanted for this testing, because it could potentially be partially covered by our health insurance, that
okay.
She said with all the testing results from the testing that she did for the $2,200, once we got that, all the diagnoses, she would provide a super bill with all the diagnoses so we could officially put it to our Blue Cross and Blue Shield insurance and see what they would cover. And we never received that.
Okay. Did you get any kind of billing?
No.
Just a tiny little receipt like you get at a grocery store.
Yeah, we got the only thing that we got that I provided a copy of was the $2,200 credit card transaction that I included with the documentation that we turned into
the board. Okay, so you never saw one that had the diagnostic codes?
No.
Okay. All right.
Can I follow up on that, Dr. Flowers, since you're on that? Did you receive a invoice that at the top says sales receipt? And then some columns, and it has under the description different diagnosis codes?
We didn't get any invoices of any type. All we got was the little credit card slips that we included in our documentation.
Okay.
A couple other forms were given.
All right. Thank you. I just wanted to confirm. Thank you. Sorry, Dr. Flowers. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah, so I'm wondering, too, I read in your complaint that you complained about a number of errors in the report. And,
correct.
And then I'm wondering were some or all of them corrected and then another copy given to you?
Yes, and then I kept presenting the form to other people, and more errors kept being found. And she would correct them, but not to my satisfaction always. Like, she kept saying that she needed to write that it was court-ordered, which it wasn't, and that was bothering me because I didn't want the school to think that this was court-ordered, and she wouldn't change that. And then as far as the school, with the, they wanted raw scores. I was never given raw scores. And they wouldn't accept what we gave them. So it was pretty much $2,200 thrown out the window because we can't use it for anything.
Okay, because it looked, maybe I misunderstood. It appeared that there was concerns or wanting this to possibly use in mitigation for your son. It's kind of legal situation, but also potentially not only that wasn't going to be done at all.
No, that's okay. Why we had two separate things.
Okay, it was solely for like school use then?
Yes.
Okay, and I'm wondering, school systems typically do have school psychologists and other people on their special ed team. Had your son already had that done so that he was in a, you know, could be considered for an IEP and that kind of thing?
He currently had an IEP already, but nobody seemed to want to test for the dyslexia, which I thought was the underlying problem his whole life. But I've talked to the doctor.
There are a lot of different forms of learning problems.
Correct.
So I'm sure you know that, but you wanted specifically that one looked at.
Yes.
Okay. All right. Thank you for your participation. That's all I have questions at this time.
Right.
Thank you.
Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I do not at this time.
I do have a question. Did you ask for the raw scores to be provided to you?
Yes, I believe I did in one of the emails.
And did you receive the raw scores?
No.
All right. I don't have any further questions. We do appreciate your comments. We're now going to move on and chat with Dr. Huggins. Are you on the phone?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thank you for being here today. Do you have any comments before we ask questions?
Yes, I do, actually. Can I just go ahead?
Yes, go ahead, please.
Okay. I just wanted to thank you for this opportunity to address the issues that are alleged by the complainant. I'm hopeful that between the information I provided in my response and my answers to any additional questions you might have this morning will alleviate any lingering doubt you may have regarding any alleged wrongdoing, as I can assure you I always have and will continue to conduct myself in the utmost ethical and professional manner from a place of integrity and respect for all other professionals and clients, with strict adherence to all statutes and specialty guidelines set forth with regard to my profession. The evaluation I conducted was well within the scope of my education, training, and experience, and it adhered to all ethical and professional statutes and guidelines for psychologists, as well as adherence to the guidelines for forensic psychology, even though this was not a court-ordered evaluation. Throughout my involvement as the evaluator of the adolescent, all conduct and practice on my part was, again, ethical, professional, and within the scope of my education, training, and experience, as well as my active participation in continuing education pursuits and the professional memberships I am a part of. Sorry, just lost my place. I also feel that the evaluation and my credentials are reflected within those active certifications, including as a school psychologist, but with my level of education, training, and experience as qualified to have conducted the evaluation in question and my involvement with this case. it was very much specifically explained what the differences were between a neuropsychological evaluation and a psychological evaluation, and they were encouraged to consider the differences and which they would want to pursue. They had both expressed the desire to move forward with the evaluation as it was, and I believe that what prompted the submission of this complaint are some extenuating circumstances that have transpired since the completion of the evaluation. To address some of the more specific things, the data that they're stating and the words raw scores were not presented to them, nor were they ever requested. But the data that would have been utilized by an educational system is incorporated within the report. All scores are reported within the report. Dyslexia was actually one of the diagnoses. I had never sent a threatening email of any kind, and I did address any and all emails for the one typo that was sent in the initial report. And parents had received a super bill on 11/25/19, and they also received the edited report. As you will find in my response, I have copies of the emails that show the attachments to them, including the insinuation that paperwork was not sent prior to the evaluation. You can see that the paperwork was initially sent on 9/11/19, and it was completed by mother. I also did meet mother because I had stayed late one afternoon to ensure that I was there for the initial meeting between Dr. Hancock and the parents for the completely separate provision of therapeutic services, as they had requested a letter be written by Dr. Hancock to the courts to show that he was going to be involved in individual therapy for the substance abuse issue. So I'm hopeful that after a review of everything that was submitted as part of my response, you will dismiss the case. Thank you.
Thank you. Questions by the board members. Dr. Flowers, as you are the lead, would you do you have questions?
Yes, I do have some. There may be, again, some errors in the report. I just wanted to run through some of those issues with you and then ask, of course, some questions. But the report says that the date of the testing was on September 9th of 2019. I'm guessing that should have been the 19th. Is that accurate?
The date of the final report that was sent does state 9/19/2019. I'm looking at it, so I don't understand.
Okay, yeah, maybe. I don't believe I saw that. I'm taking here.
Dr. Huggins, this is Jennifer Michelson from the board office. We're looking at the final evaluation, which is page 134 of the report, and it does state that the date of testing is September 9th.
Yeah, that's what I'm looking at.
Page are you on?
Okay.
134.
Or the...
Yeah, so...
why there's a discrepancy.
Okay, maybe we didn't get the final report.
I think it is the final report. There's an error on it, I believe. Go.
Okay. Otherwise, it appears that the testing was done prior to the permission being given. And you know, according to you, you've heard the individuals state that the paperwork and the permission was completed after, well, even while the testing had already started. Can you comment on that?
Yes, that's incorrect. They had brought in the completed developmental history form that was sent in that initial email on 9/11 and the consent paperwork. Also, a separate set of consent paperwork to be included in a separate file for the therapy was completed when they came in for their first therapy session. But the intake paperwork and developmental history was brought in with them because it had been sent on 9/11. And I'm actually looking at an email right here that was sent Monday, November 18th, that does have the final report sent to the parents, which does state 9/19 as the date
okay,
of testing.
Okay, well, maybe we just didn't get that. And I'm wondering if that's one reason why some of the errors that were pointed out by the complainant are still in the report we have for the final report. Because
again,
it does talk about...
Again, I don't know what errors other than there was one typo
oh, okay.
name, and that was completed, and that was corrected and sent to her. And again, this, I'm
okay.
I had included it in my response.
Well, there's another one now. Where it talks about testing results and indicating that one of the son's percentiles was in the 23rd percentile, but in the high average range, which would not make any sense. It's not page 7 of the report. So,
it's on page 7 of the report.
Yeah. Yeah, so let me see.
And we don't want to say what the testing was for, but that the but this percentile seems to not reflect your comment that it was in a high average range.
High, yeah. Yeah, that was
oh,
my point. That's on, it's on PDF page 140, but it's page 7 of the report.
I believe. That would be average,
I think,
right. That would be an average range. That was an oversight.
Yeah.
But that was not
but
pointed
I'm,
out
I'm
to
just
me.
Wondering... maybe that was an oversight.
Yes, that was not pointed out by the parents as one of the errors in the report. The only email I received regarding errors was the name in the recommendations section, which was completed, and no other errors were pointed out.
Okay, and then I'm also wondering where, like, sources of information, one of them was clinical interview with parents. Can you comment on, you know, it obviously it appears that some questionnaires were filled out by them, but was there like you had like a formal in-person face-to-face meeting with them?
I had met both parents, initially stepfather when he brought the child in for the testing and turned in the developmental history questionnaire, at which time I did tell him, let me review this, and if I have any additional questions or require additional information, I'll
so
be in touch.
So it's not like you met him and you took the questionnaire, but it wasn't like they came in the office and tell me about, you know, his history and your concerns. Okay.
No, any of that was done via phone.
Okay, I need one person speaking at a time, and please, if you're not speaking, try to stay away from the phone receiver. We're getting a lot of feedback. So the question, I believe, from Dr. Flowers is, did you meet with both parents in person? If you could answer that specific question.
And not only in person, but beyond just you accepted the questionnaire from them. But, you know, a clinical interview sounds more formal, as in going to an office, sitting down, and generally conversing every 15 minutes to an hour kind of thing.
Doctor, could you answer that, please?
I had met both parents and discussed any developmental information only via phone and email because of mom's work schedule. That was one of the complicating factors, which is why the initial therapy session had to be so late in the evening, was to accommodate that. But I had stayed to meet her, but any questions I had, which were minimal, were provided via email and phone discussion, and then also provided by the child. Given his age, he was well within the capability of providing his own perspective on his experiences, not necessarily his development, but that was addressed with the parents.
Okay, well, maybe just the phraseology of the report is can be seen as kind of confusing, but the data testing looks like it was the 19th of September, and the report was done on November the 6th. I'm wondering, that seems like quite a while to complete it. Were there difficulties in getting that put together?
No, it was used as a training opportunity for the two practicum students I have, and so there were many sessions of supervision and scoring reviews and case conceptualization to be held in meetings, and since I don't have them but 2 days a week, we had met several times, but there was no deadline issued because it wasn't court-ordered, and the letter had been provided between this time to the courts by Dr. Hancock for the therapy side, and it just was a matter of using it as a training instrument and getting them to write up portions and editing and going back and forth in that manner.
And I'm wondering, I saw on the report some signature blocks. I guess they were the students that might have been involved, but I didn't see that either one of them had signed it.
No. The final one that might be in his file is probably signed by them, but they were provided copies for their records. But since I oversaw the entire process,
okay,
and also did...
I'm wondering if the parents were given information regarding student involvement in the process and the roles and supervision.
Yes, they were provided, especially stepfather, with the initial two phone calls as we scheduled, and all the differences were explained to him. And then the day the child showed up for testing, it was explained that he would begin the testing process with the students, that I oversee all of it, and then I step in and take over testing during that process, so that I'm meeting with the child, I do the interview with the child, and then as part of the intake paperwork, there is an intake form that states students are utilized under my supervision.
Okay, so that's in there. I didn't see it. That doesn't mean, well, could be I did let it register in my brain, but that's also helpful. Also, in your correspondence with the mother, you made quite a few negative comments about Dr. Hancock. I'm wondering what your rationale for doing that was.
That was part of those extenuating circumstances that have transpired since the submission of the final report in November, and Dr. Hancock's conduct, which actually has a pending complaint, should she apply for licensure, made by me. And I was informing the parent that her ongoing contact with her both ways, between Dr. Hancock and her, and then her with Dr. Hancock, would not be in Dr. Hancock's best interest. She interpreted it, my impression is she interpreted that possibly as threatening, but the motivation behind it was, if you do care about Dr. Hancock professionally or personally or whatever, your ongoing contact with her is not going to help her should these complaints come to light when she applies for licensure. And I have ongoing involvement with the Psychology Training Consortium, so I'm not honestly sure, because I'm supposed to go through Larry Cohen with that, I'm not honestly sure what I am allowed to state with regard
okay.
to this.
So that's kind of separate, right? Yeah, I thought when I read the report I would see that she was one of the people involved in it, but I guess you were maybe talking about it in regards to the therapy issue that she was assisting
with. She was not involved in testing at all, because it was kept separate from the outset, as but knowing she would be going into the therapy role, which was also explained to the parents that it has to be completely separate, but that my information she would have access to with their permission if that guided therapy in any way. But the therapy was a completely separate issue that began after the completion of the evaluation, not necessarily the submission of the final report, but after the completion of the evaluation.
Okay. All right. Okay, thank you for your comments and answers. Other board members, committee members, please.
Thank you. Dr. Flowers, on page 75 of my PDF, it's the informed consent. I don't see where it talks about students. participating, and I know you're much more detail-oriented than I am. If you want to take a look at that.
Well, I was looking at that as well, and I couldn't find it.
I couldn't find it either, so I just was curious on that. Doctor, did you have a final, did you have a closing meeting with the parents to discuss the report? Doctor?
You're on mute. Not a formal one. Hello?
Yes, thank you.
Hello?
Can you, we can hear you.
Not a formal, okay, not a formal meeting because it was never requested. Since the submission of the report, there had actually been no contact until the mother had reached out, pointing out the name of the typo that was contained in the report, and that's where it kind of went from there. But also between that time was those extenuating circumstances that occurred, and it just, I feel like just had started off, gone south at that point because it wasn't, it was very accusatory, it felt like. So there was no formal meeting nor request for a formal meeting. It just simply was, the first contact was an email about the typo. And that was corrected and sent.
Okay, and you mentioned, did you have a meeting with the mother on the phone regarding getting the background information for the child?
I don't recall if there was a formal meeting, but I did I had spoken with her when I had was there for the introduction to introduce them to Dr. Hancock and stated that I had no developmental questions as everything was fairly straightforward. And with the collateral information provided, there was also a developmental history contained within that documentation that didn't differ from what she had reported in the forms that I submitted. So I didn't have any additional questions.
Okay, and was this evaluation, was it court-appointed?
No.
Was it recommended by the court?
What was relayed to me was their attorney had recommended they seek an evaluation.
Okay, on the report, it says the referral was prompted by a recommendation from the juvenile court to determine the current levels of, you know, and then it goes on. Who recommended it from the juvenile court? And do you have the documentation of that recommendation?
Only through the verbal reporting by the parents that their attorney had recommended it and presented that in court that that was going to happen and that the judge had accepted that verbal expression of that information and would wait to see if it would sort of change or alter the course of the legal action being taken against them.
So you don't have anything from the judge, you don't have a minute entry or anything stating specifically that the juvenile court recommended this?
No, only in the capacity that the attorney presented it to juvenile court because she recommended it.
But you heard that from the stepfather who said they got the idea from the attorney?
From both parents, yes.
Can you, so you don't have anything that states that it's required by the juvenile court? Could you, is that what you're stating?
If you mean like a legal form, like a minute entry, no, just my handwritten notes that I took while on the phone with father and the emails.
Okay. Did they ask you to remove that?
No.
They did not ask you to remove that statement from the evaluation?
No, not that I recall, because the initial phone call, it was repeatedly stated that they would like this to use in court to see if mitigating factors such as a learning disability.
But doctor, is there a difference between wanting to use the document in court and one being required or recommended by the court?
I'm sorry, can you repeat the question?
Yeah, is there a difference between wanting to use, having a study done to use as in the court as evidence or to support whomever, as opposed to the court requiring or recommending a evaluation?
Yes, there's a difference typically. If the court's requiring it, their justification or motivation, I guess, is different than when it was recommended by the attorney to use possibly in his defense to guide court decision-making because
right.
the difficulties he had had completing diversion, but also the difficulties he was experiencing as a result of his behavior within the school context.
Right. So I guess my concern is what the document says is the referral was prompted by a recommendation from the juvenile court, which to me, and let me just make clear that I am not a psychologist, I represent the general public, but to me, that alludes to the juvenile court has recommended or requested this evaluation. And so it, you know, kind of has a different presence in some ways when it's being reviewed. So you did not receive anything from the court. What your statement is that their attorney recommended this as a means for them to have something to give to the court if they decide to.
That's partially correct. The other part of the information that was relayed to me by parents was that the judge was in agreement that getting data on the child could help with decision making, but it wasn't ordered by him.
Okay. Also, there was a long, I mean, and Dr. Flowers mentioned this, from the date it was, the testing was done to by the time they received it. Is that your general practice to have someone that kind of a timeline? It's almost like a month and a half.
It's not general practice, no, but then there's also other circumstances for different kinds of cases. Some do have deadlines on them. If it's a contractual issue, they definitely have deadlines. This is one of those scenarios where the parents had been amicable all the way up until post-extenuating circumstances, with the notion that the report was in process the entire time, and the more sort of pressing issue was the letter provided by Dr. Hancock to the court stating he was in individual therapy and that their case was still just ongoing and pending. There was never a pressing argument made, I guess I want to say, about it being for school as it's being presented now. It always was initially about court, but it would benefit the
okay.
school because of the repercussions the child was suffering from his behavior and how his education could go moving forward if additional disabilities were discovered to drive the IEP. Yes, an IEP meeting had to be postponed, but there were no timelines within that side of it, like the certification for school psychology and those timeline requirements for special education and things like that that were a part of this.
Okay. There's a, I mentioned it earlier, there's a sales receipt here that has, you know, Trilogy Psychological Services, some columns, it looks like an invoice, and then, you know, the diagnosis. Was that given to the parents?
Yes, it was sent in an email on 11/25, and I submitted that as part of my response.
Okay. And one moment, please. Let me just check. I had to make sure I got all my questions. And did you provide any raw scores to the, have you provided raw scores to the parents?
No, that's not typical practice. And in fact, you don't release raw scores or even standard scores to anybody not trained to do so. But all of those scores, for the purposes of the school and or the courts, were provided within the report. All the scores are in the report.
And did you provide any reading comprehensive testing to the child?
Yes. If you look on page, between pages, oh, page two, you can see that an entire educational achievement battery was given, as well as the GORT, which is the gray oral reading test, which looks at fluency, rate, and comprehension specifically. And again, those scores are reported within the report.
Okay. thank you. Dr. Davis-Wilson, do you have any questions?
I do. I have just one. Dr. Huggins, when a family comes to you for psychoeducational evaluation, is it a common practice of yours to just wait for them to request to go over the results, or how do you approach that in your general practice when it comes to reviewing assessment results with families?
There's a two-part answer to that. Number one, this was not a psychoeducational evaluation, and so my typical practice when it is a psychoeducational, whether that's just parent self-referral or as an independent educational evaluation through a school district, I do hold what's called a feedback session and go over the results. Once the report has been submitted and the parents have a chance to read it, I hold the feedback session to go over what it all means and then answer any questions at that time. Now, my process for when it's a psychological evaluation or any other context, whether it's contractual, if I'm allowed to by contract, I do offer it after they've received it and read through it and if they have any questions. And then I accommodate their schedules, such as in this case, given they were so far on the West Valley. If it's easier to do it via phone or email, I make myself available to do it that way.
Okay, and you're saying this isn't a psychoeducational evaluation. However, on November 15th, there is an email to the family saying, I can certainly change the title of the type of evaluation to a psychoeducational evaluation. Can you explain then what type of evaluation this was?
It was a psychological, as it was expressed to them in the first two phone calls with stepfather, because it was always expressed that it was to be utilized for the courts primarily and the school secondarily. Now, if there had been any expression of confusion that the school wasn't going to accept it, which was explained to them that it does cover all the components of what a psychoeducational would contain, given the educational portions that were included, including the behavior rating scales, that if the school needed it to say that, there really is no ethical or professional issue with changing the title for the purpose of the school. But it was always expressed to me that it was a psychological evaluation for the courts. The school part was secondary, just to guide if there needed to be any updates or revisions to his eligibility categories and or his IEP.
Thank you.
All right, any further questions from the board?
Yes, I'd just like to do a follow-up question.
Dr. Flowers.
Yeah, we've already, to some degree, touched on this, but the informed consent appears to be more of a generic thing for evaluation of psychological services as well as psychotherapy. But I guess I don't see within this if there are specifics about what services you're going to be given for these individuals or, you know, for the son. And,
correct.
Was there like a separate verbal understanding in talking to them what you're going to do and why and how to be?
Yes, there are two files for this individual. One is the therapy file and one is the evaluation file. The evaluation file, which is all I have in regards as it pertains to the complaint and my understanding of it, is my information with the consent forms that they signed a completely separate set for the therapy file. And it was explained to them, it was very well explained to them in the two initial phone calls before the child even came in and in the setting up of the appointment that my role was as evaluator and that Dr. Hancock was a postdoctoral resident, very well trained and qualified to do the therapy, but that was a completely separate service and therefore a completely separate file is created with a completely separate set of intake paperwork. But as my understanding of what the complaint contained, there was no issue with the therapy portions of things.
Okay.
Any further questions, Dr. Flowers?
Thank you again. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Doctor, for participating. The board now will go into deliberations. Again, this is a time where just the board talks amongst itself regarding the complaint. Dr. Flowers, you're the lead. Would you like to start with the discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. There are a lot of confusing aspects of this situation. It appears that parents were having some kind of hopes for the process, and including that it would affect or be available for the educational system. Reading was one of the issues, but also it appeared within the actual report that there appeared to be, I read that it was going to be used for possible mitigation in regards to the son's legal situation. And I don't know whether it was explained clearly to the parents the role of the students. It sounded as if they were very beside themselves. It's like, what exactly needs to be done here to finish this report and get it to us? Possibly we don't have the one that was modified with errors removed to deal with some of these issues, or typos and other kind of things. And then the length of getting it seemed questionable, a couple of months, and those kind of things trouble me. Indeed, it does appear there was a huge amount of work done on this. It wasn't like a one-hour evaluation and some quick testing with a few subtests here and there and then a charge of $2,200. It was like a substantial amount of testing and results. And for the most part, it appears that the summaries are done appropriately with, some of the errors that were mentioned. And again, I'm concerned this one, there were different agendas and expectations, and I think some unfortunate outcomes. I'd invite comments from other staff, or excuse me, committee members on this.
Yeah, I would agree with your comments. I mean, I have some concerns with the timeline, with I can't find a consent stating there's students involved. It does say that it was recommended by the court, the juvenile court, but there's no documentation to that in regards to, it appears as though the perception of, how that can be perceived. I know the parents raised a concern. So I have some concerns with that. Dr. Davis Wilson, any thoughts?
I second those concerns as well. I think the informed consent not outlining the student's role and participation is problematic, and I also am concerned about the discrepancies and inconsistencies across the report and the communication with the delayed communication with getting the information out.
All right. With that, Dr. Flowers or Dr. Davis Wilson, I'm also looking. Do you feel as though there was a potential violation that we'd want to take this to the board for further discussion? And if so, what would those be?
Yes, I'd like to make a motion on this. I've complained. I'd like to make a motion that it be referred to the full board for initial review for possible violations of ARS 32-2061, 16 on professional conduct, for age failing or refusing to maintain and retain adequate business, financial, or professional records pertaining to the psychological services provided to the client, and providing services that are unnecessary or unsafe or otherwise engaging in activities as a psychologist that are unprofessional by current standards of practice. I'm wondering if informed consent, as it was there, but it wasn't, to me, complete. So I don't know that that would be reach the level of needing to be looked at as well. So those are the two areas that I feel could go forward. And I make a motion for those.
I will second the motion. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, all in favor for the motion, aye?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion carries. I just want to let both parties know that you'll be hearing from our board staff and when for further information and when this item will be taken to the full board for consideration. Thank you for participating. Our next item, the last complaint, is T-2003. Dr. Cassandra Wisdom. Dr. Flowers, you're the lead.
Thank you. I'd like to make a brief summary of the complaint. The complaint said there was an anonymous individual said that Dr. Cassandra Wisdom, a non-licensed individual, presented herself as a forensic psychologist at her LinkedIn account. She has a doctorate degree in industrial organizational psychology, and it was on the 5th of March of this year the board received the response from Dr. Wisdom. She said that she was surprised to see a LinkedIn profile to begin with, as well as the term forensic psychologist. And she said that she's requested the account be closed, and she was informed that it would take up to 3 days for the account to be completely deleted. And then board staff checked on the 10th of March, attempted to access Ms. Wisdom's LinkedIn profile and found that the profile is not accessible. And there is a pop-up message saying the profile is not available. And in a Google search of Ms. Wisdom, there was no other information to reflect she's portraying herself as a psychologist. This concludes my summary of the complaint.
All right. Thank you, Dr. Flowers. Dr. Wisdom, are you on the phone? All right. Hearing none. Any discussion amongst ourselves? It appears as though she has then deleted the information that there were concerns about.
Yes, if there was an issue, it appears that she's taken action, and I think all the board could do if we were to forward this to ask that she do what she's already done.
Correct.
So I'd like to make a motion the complaint be dismissed.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
All right, we have a motion and a second. All in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Hearing none, the motion passes. All right, the last item on the agenda is, first I want to thank Ms. Galvin for being here and for our wonderful board staff for their work and dedication and all of you guys making sure that we're heading in the right direction with the material that we need. And the last item is adjournment. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
I second.
I am moved and a second. I hope you both have a wonderful day and a safe trip. Dr. Davis-Wilson, all in favor? Aye.
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 Hearing no opposition, we are now ended. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Bye.